Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. And it is the first Saturday in March 2016. Man, this year is flying by. I am ranching like a maniac, working on a bunch of projects for clients, and writing books like a maniac. In fact, I guess I'm just a maniac. I'm sure the files they have on me in Washington, D.C. have me labeled maniac or worse. Who knows? Well, today we have, we're going to hit a lot of things on this show today because there's a lot of things to talk about. I'm going to delay for at least another week, by the way, this tracking I'm doing of United States money, that is U.S. government money, that's your money and my money, going to mosques around this country and then being funneled to terrorist organizations. The more I dig into it, the worse it gets. So stay tuned for that show, which I've postponed several times as new scintillating facts come to light. But here's what we're going to be covering today. Number one, I've had a lot of letters from readers. You know, I do shows, and parts of them are on preparedness and family safety. There's a whole family safety column. Read those articles. Particularly last few weeks, not too many this week. And I don't recommend, you know, I'm not recommending any of these products. There's no endorsement intended. It's out there for information. You do your own research. Decide if you want this stuff, don't want this stuff, like the ideas, don't like the ideas. But the bottom line is, be prepared. We live in very uncertain times, economically, in terms of terror and just plain physical safety, and obviously in terms of international chaos. And then, of course, you have North Korea, and you have Iran, and you have Pakistan, you know, a bunch of rogue nations who either are or soon will be armed with nuclear weapons. And thanks to the North Koreans, missiles to get them to about wherever they want to get to. You know, the letters I've gotten over the last week or two, because I've focused on economic news pretty much the last 4 to 6 weeks, since actually maybe towards the year end, I've warned you of what is going on in macroeconomic trends. I'm going to talk about a few more of them today we haven't talked about before. And I have given you, I think, some great insights from some great economists from all across the spectrum. And, you know, you're all big people. You have brains. You know your personal portfolio, your personal wealth, your personal income, your assets, what your goals in life are. You are unique. Each person listening to this show, the 370,000, 75,000 now, whatever it is, every one of you has a different story than every other one of you. Nobody can make decisions for you. But there are some basics which I think are universal. Like universal energies, these are universal truths in terms of being prepared. Number one, there is definitely a increasing war on cash by all the Western nations, including the United States. It is getting more and more difficult to transactions in cash. Many of the European countries have strict limits on any cash transaction, ranging from U.S. equivalent $500 to $1,000. Germany's about to institute a 5,000 euro limit. And, you know, the elites want you to go to digital currency. That then they can control you. They can't control cash under the mattress. They can't control the barter economy. They can't control the cash economy. And they're all about control. So while I am the last one to tell you to not have some cash reserves in the banks, and we've discussed that, right? Under law, this is the law, folks. This isn't some, you know, black helicopter, chicken little, the sky is, this is the law. Your deposits in a bank are not your deposits. It is not money you own. What you get in your monthly statement is the IOU from the bank. And when push comes to pull, these banks have the power, particularly with the stroke of a pen anywhere in the government, to capitalize your accounts and put them into their own bank capital to make the bank quote-unquote solvent so it doesn't have to be bailed out by the government. This is the law. It is the way it is. That $250,000 protection you think you have for all your accounts, number one, the government is now tracking by Social Security number or TIN, not by bank. So whereas 10 years ago you could have $250,000, if you were lucky enough to have that kind of money, in five different banks and be covered, that is no longer the case. They will track it by Social Security number or TIN. You will be limited to $250,000. Now, if you think you're going to get your $250,000, that's a whole nother story. There is approximately somewhere between $7 and $12 trillion in deposits in the United States. And there is approximately $28 billion in the FDIC, we'll call it $250,000 fund. You can do the math. Now, we do have a printing press, and what does that create? Inflation, right? If they have to print, let's say half those deposits are covered, $5 trillion, they got to print $4 trillion, so the FDIC can pay everybody $250,000 worthless dollars, you know, you get inflation. And in inflation, and in the current economic conditions, whether it's deflation, and I'm going to explain this in a minute, or inflation, the only place you should have your investments, in my opinion, I am not a financial advisor, but I do have a modicum of common sense and a fairly vast reservoir of business experience, is hard assets. What is a hard asset? Some people think a hard asset is gold and silver. And perhaps everybody should have a bit of gold and silver because it is a form of money exchange since the beginning of man. And if paper dollars are worthless, or you can't get your hands on paper dollars because of the war on cash, then a little bit of silver, a little bit of gold can go a long way. That's up to everybody to decide for themselves. Hard assets are land. Particularly well-located land, not too close to a city. You don't want to be within a tank full of gas of the have-nots when they have nothing. And you don't want to be so far out that there's no long-term value in the property because nobody can reach it. So if you take a metropolitan area and you draw about a three-hour band around it, somewhere in that 3 to 4 hour band is a prime spot. If you then apply the principles, in fact, they're outlined in my book, Land for Love and Money. You can get it on Amazon, BN, wherever. Land for Love and Money, and you can go to the website, www.landforloveandmoney.com. But you don't have to buy my book. There's others out there. And I'm not trying to sell the book right now. If you apply within that band you've drawn the following principles, what communities are likely to be self-supportive in self-defense? What communities and or states most closely mirror your political thoughts? What communities or states are fiscally sound? What communities or states have conservative fiscal policies? What communities or states most highly regard private property rights? And what community or states have the most liberal gun laws? And, you know, you will start to define an area in which you can find a piece of land. Now, some people buy thousands of acres. It's a different realm. But it's a hard asset. And it's an asset that will, in my opinion, while it may go up and down, in the long term, it will hold, maintain, and increase its value. What there is least of is worth most. A larger piece of land gives you options. You can do a conservation easement on part of it and save yourself all sorts of income and estate taxes. By the way, also discussed in my book, you can shave off a piece of the land and get back some of your capital investment. You can build on a piece of the land to have a safe retreat, or if you're a sportsman, a fishing or hunting cabin to enjoy in the meantime. And hopefully that's all it will ever be, a fishing and hunting cabin. Not the Trail's End last stand place. And then there's smaller pieces of land, which, by the way, are just going bananas right now, because a lot of people have figured out what I'm telling you. You know, and these are 5, 10, 20, 40, 100-acre parcels. The more acreage you buy, the less you will pay per acre, period. That's just the market. So many times you can get, for not a whole bunch more money, 80 to 100 acres for about the same price you can get 20 acres for. Figure out the attributes you want for your land. Do you want water, springs, creek, view, timber, no timber, south aspect, north aspect? What's the access from a maintained pavement road? Is it year-round? If there's no water on the property, what's the history of wells in the area? I mean, there's many things to consider. But one of the key hard assets that I believe everybody should have in their portfolio to preserve their wealth, to have a safe place to go that is self-sustainable, very important, and to maintain wealth for future generations, not to mention the fact that you can enjoy a piece of land far more than you can enjoy a piece of paper, i.e. a stock or a bond, is land. It may be improved or may not be improved. Maybe it has an old dumpy farmhouse on it. You want to take on a project of fixing her up, like I did on my place. I happen to love that kind of stuff. Maybe you don't. Maybe you want to build something. Maybe you want to build a decent-sized house, or maybe you want to build a one-room cabin. Whatever it is, give that serious thought. Serious thought. And for those of you who live in rural areas, and I know many of my listeners are rural, unfortunately, you folks who are listening in the cities or the suburbs don't have some of these options, although you have many. I've done a number of shows on how to be prepared. You go up to the search bar, type in Nancy Stiortz. She was the public safety administrator for like three presidents. Great show. Interviewed her 3-4 years ago. I've done a number of other shows. I think if you type prepare or preparedness or family safety, something like that in the search bar, you can catch some of those. I'm not going to go over those mundane items, have enough batteries and, you know, 6 months supply of food, extra water. We all know that, right? That's just common sense. Here's a couple other tips for you folks. You can apply them in your own way, you suburban and urban listeners. But you rural listeners will really benefit from this. Most rural listeners are on propane. Fuel, very temporarily, I'm going to talk about this in the show, fuel is very cheap right now. If you go out and you buy another 500 or 1,000 gallon propane tank to fit in with your current propane tank, you will find that your fuel cost savings, if you move quickly, will pay for the tank. You got a free tank, and you have doubled your fuel reserve. Now, obviously many of us are on electric power. Hopefully you have your generator. Make sure you have some spare parts for your generator. If things break down in transportation or whatever, you won't be able to fix your generator unless you have some basic spare parts. Put them in a plastic bag, know where it is. You know, you should be good to go. There will be times when the generator doesn't work. An EMP blast, for instance. And heaven forbid we have one of those. Or the generator breaks down and you don't have parts and you can't get parts. If you're on propane, you have a gas, you have a propane line coming into your home, probably in the utility room area. You know, run a adjunct line and have this done by a plumber or certified gas guy, not you. You don't want to have a gas wreck. Run a gas line, run a T off of that. Put yourself in some propane lights in your utility room. You can punch that line through the wall without screwing up anything. No fuss, no muss. And put a propane light on the other side of the wall in whatever room that is. Put in a 10,000 BTU or whatever is going to work for you propane wall heater. Run it off the same line. In your kitchen, probably, if you're in a rural area, you have a propane stove or a propane refrigerator. You have propane in your kitchen. You may have it in other areas of the house. Wherever you have a propane line that's exposed without tearing up anything, no remodeling necessary for this. You can run a T off that line with either a flex line or copper, which is right on the wall. You can put in a single or double or even triple propane light and a small auxiliary propane wall heater. In other words, will this do like your entire house? No, but it will do key areas of your house. And you have a functional, although not complete, auxiliary system with lots of extra propane to spare. It might come in very handy one day in terms of light and heat. All right. Look, there's other tips that I'm going to be giving from time to time, but today's show, I wanted to start off with that. Because I've gotten a number of emails, like what should I do emails. I can't tell you what to do, folks. I can only tell you what I know. I can tell you what I do. I can tell you the conclusions that common sense leads me to. I've shared some of those with you today. I'll share more in the future. Today, we're going to talk about the debate and the Republicans and my interesting experience at a Wyoming County caucus last week. And my observations on all of that. And no, I have not made a selection yet. But we're going to honestly review each of the candidates today, strengths and weaknesses, very briefly. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the new FBI anti-terrorism handbook and some things that are happening on the terror front, which the mainstream media just doesn't really want to give you the scoop on, but you really need to know. I'm going to talk to you about the Russian reset. Remember Hillary's Russian reset? Wait till you hear where that has led us. This overlooked crony capitalism part of the omnibus budget bill, that 2,000-page monstrosity absolutely nobody read. They had 24 hours to look it over. That was passed by the House and Senate December 15th in a complete cave-in to Obama. Wait till you hear about the Russian reset, folks. Wow, you're going to shake your head. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about Hillary today and where I think that's all going with the FBI investigation and the continuing emergence of her repeated lies, traitorous actions, and revelation of our secrets to the rest of the world, probably setting back our security apparatus 10 years. But who cares? She made money on it. We're going to talk about some economic megatrends today that I have not talked about in the past, along with a real quick analysis of some stats, BS snats, smoke and mirror stats, more of them from the government that came out this week. And we're going to talk about the price of oil and one of the things that's starting to affect it that nobody is talking about, but which I raised the possibility of 6 months ago, and it's happening. And it has to do with Saudi Arabia. And finally, if I have time, which I've been meaning to do the last 3 weeks, yakky yakky me, I'm going to read you a little bit more out of this American Thinker article, which was really, along with that Deep State article I read, you can type it into the search bar, Deep State, which I read, one of the best articles I've read in 20 years. Anyway, it'll be worth it, and I hope we get to it. So, without further ado, because I don't want to get castrated by the AM stations here, let's talk about the debate and the Republicans. Number one, my perception of the strengths and weaknesses of each of these candidates are as follows. Trump, his strengths are he's the best organizer and manager on the stage. You don't build $10 billion, whatever it is, of buildings without being able to assemble a hell of a team. Judging by his family, who's out there plugging for him, he has assembled a hell of a team. Nobody else on that stage, other than Kasich, perhaps, has done anything remotely similar. Number two, you could look at this both ways, but he's not afraid to admit a mistake and change courses when the facts warrant it. Let's hope that it's not just political wins, but the facts. Number three, although many people wring their hands and go, oh my God, he shouldn't be in charge of the nuclear button, etc. Actually, I think that a President Trump, that 4 years or eight, whatever it would be the safest 4 years we have had in a long, long time. Because, you know, the rest of the world pretty much thinks he's crazy. And that's a good thing. Because if you think somebody's crazy and they have the biggest army in the world, you're probably not going to do anything to piss him off because you don't know what he's going to do. So there's the opposite side of that coin. You never have to worry about him reaching for the button, is my point, because nobody will ever take any steps that would make him even think about reaching for the button. In that way, he's kind of like Reagan, but on a different tangent. Now, in terms of his weaknesses, you know, the guy is a dichotomy. There are times that I listen to him in a one-on-one interview, and I go, wow, that was great. I mean, I think I could really support this guy. And then the next day, he comes out with some inane stuff about this candidate or this person or whatever, which is just kind of off the wall. And it doesn't do much for me. It doesn't do much for me at all. So I don't know if this is theatrics. I don't know if it's his basic temperament. I don't know if it's just a drive to get press. I don't know if it's some brilliant political strategy that I'm not aware of. But, you know, there's a balancing act there. The guy can definitely be serious, sincere, and speak heartfelt and well. And then other times, you know, well, you've seen it or you've heard it. I do admit, though, that some of them are really funny. He did tweet out, I bet, and this isn't exact, but it's along the lines, I bet President Obama would attend Scalia's funeral if it was held in a mosque. I mean, I cracked up over that one. How true. Oh, my. Then we have Kasich. I've always liked Kasich. He's steady. He knows his stuff. He has the best experience of anybody on the stage in terms of government, making government work. And I think he's totally sincere. My problems with Kasich really boil down to one thing. Is he tough enough to beat Hillary Clinton? Now, the polls say he's leading her by more than any other candidate 11 points. Who knows? But I just don't know if he's tough enough to beat Hillary Clinton. Because you're not going to beat Hillary Clinton by turning the other cheek. I mean, we watched that with Romney, right? I'm going to get to that in just a moment. because my opinion of Romney has completely changed in the last week, as has my opinion of Rubio. So Kasich, I think, would be a great president. But if he can't win, then he's not going to be president. And if he isn't willing to get down in the trenches and slug it out with Hillary and knock her over the head with her own dark, evil, corrupt frying pans, he's not going to win the election. Period. No Mr. Nice Guy is going to win. Look at Bernie and Hillary. Bernie's a nice guy. Wacko. Crazy ideas. Well, not crazy. I mean, if you're a socialist. And he's turned the other cheek, and he's losing. He's losing. So that's my problems and what I think the best about Kasich is. Rubio. On the plus side, smarter than a whip. At least on paper, let me underline that, on paper, he knows all the policy stuff. He knows the foreign affairs stuff. He has all the facts and details. He seems to understand the intricacies of international geopolitical strife and conflict. He seems to have many of the right answers. You know, I just don't know if he has the experience on the con side. And over the last week, and he was right up there in the top two for who I was really watching. In the last week, with his nonsense, with his degradation of himself into the gutter, talking about the size of people's hands, etc., I've really lost a lot of respect for him. In a lot of ways, Trump calls him Little Marco. That is the way he's behaved in the last week. So, you know, a lot of pluses, but some suddenly appeared big negatives. And then we have Cruz. Now, you know, there is no policy of Cruz's other than he might be a little bit too prone to forcing religion down people's throats. And trust me, I believe in a higher power. But I don't believe in ramming my belief down anybody else's throat, nor do I want their belief rammed down mine. That's my one hesitation in his policies. Other than that, policy-wise, I am most for him. There's nothing he says that I can't support. Here's the problem. He's not a likable guy. He's not a likable guy. And I don't think he has a snowball's chance in hell of beating Hillary Clinton. I mean, she'll win just on the likability factor, and you know how unlikable she is. So a President Cruz would be terrific in a lot of respects, but once again, kind of like Kasich, I'm not sure he's ever going to get to the point where the word president is from front of his name, in which case it does us no good. I went to the Converse County caucuses Tuesday, March 1. It was very interesting. I got drafted, by the way. I mean, literally, like I said, I don't have time, I can't do it. And everybody said, too bad, it's unanimous, you're doing it. So I am now the delegate to the county convention, which is, you know, on one hand, I'm thrilled. On the other hand, I really don't have time. And I'm going to do my best to not get drafted to the state convention. We'll see how hopefully I'll have more success than at the county level. In any event, it was very interesting. I talked to a lot of people there. And, you know, I would say that in this county, at least, it was about 70% Trump, about 25% Cruz, and 5% others. And I asked a lot of people, you know, were there great political intellects at the caucus? No. Were there great economic minds at the caucus? No. But there was a hell of a lot of common sense. I mean, boots on the ground, street smarts, common sense from a Wyoming community that is deeply concerned and cares. And these people get it. They get it. They understand what's going on. They understand what needs to be done, and they are desperately seeking somebody who will do it. And their faith in the people who are in power, whether they call themselves conservatives or not, is less than zero. It was a very interesting evening. And I left there with a better understanding of how, in general, people, that is, people who are at least moderate or right of moderate, feel about what's been going on. And I also left there, by the way, with a, in some ways, a calmed heart. Because what the people I talked to at that meeting, what I saw at that meeting, there were about 200 people there. That's a lot of people for a caucus in a county this size. Let me tell you, it's huge. As Trump would say, huge. But what I saw gave me a lot of faith in America. And it reinforced my feelings that in the end, we Americans who subscribe to American values, who value the Constitution in its originalist form, i.e. as the founders intended when they wrote it, we will win. It's just not going to be easy, and it's going to take a long time because we've been asleep at the switch for way too long. So that is my political spin for today. Let's talk about terror. First of all, there's been a number of terror attacks around the world. They're barely covered. In Pakistan, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Africa, hundreds, if not thousands, of people have been killed over the last week since my last radio show. There is a humanitarian crisis, completely the fault of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, going in Aleppo. These are the Aleppo people are the people that supposedly we are supporting. And we are doing squat. Just like we left the Kurds out to dry and didn't arm them, the Canadians are. Just like so far, we've still left the Ukrainians out to dry, didn't arm them, send them blankets instead. Just like we left that poor doctor who fingered bin Laden for us to rot in a Pakistani jail, our Marine in the Mexican jail, the hostages in Iran that it's now coming to light. We paid a huge ransom for over and above the $150 billion we gave those maniacs bent on our destruction. Just as sure as I'm talking to you, the blame lies 100%, not 99.99, on what's going on in the Middle East at the feet of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton because it's all about Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama because he is a socialist Islamist. That is what he is. He is commander-in-chief of ISIS, not of the United States. All right. The FBI, the new terror training manual came out for the FBI. Guess what's not in there? Because CARE, who really represents radical Islam in the United States, CARE objected to it. Now, why they were ever given a copy of it to object to it in the first place, I will leave for your imagination to put together. But nonetheless, they objected to it, so the new FBI terror training manual does not only, as it has for the last 3 years, and including the CIA, and including the Department of Defense, training manuals, does not have the word jihad, does not have the words radical Islam, and now, for the first time, it does not have the word Islamist. I've talked about this on previous shows, right? There are Muslims who believe in a peaceful Islam. There are American Muslims who put the Constitution above Sharia, and these Muslims are our friends. Just like the Catholic down the street is, or the Jew, or the Presbyterian, or the Protestant, or the Baptist. And then there's Islamists. Whether they are violent, i.e. terrorists, or they are nonviolent, and instead want to infiltrate and direct government and stage the from-within takeover of countries and systems through immigration and otherwise, as is now happening in Europe, that word is no longer in the training manual. Other news on the terror front, it's been leaked out that the biggest concern, the two biggest concerns, besides a dirty bomb, by the way, the two biggest concerns that our intelligence agencies have for a mass casualty attack on the United States have to do with, number one, with the use of drones in a crowded situation such as a stadium, and number two, the use of chemical weapons, which has come to light, I've posted articles on it over the last 4 weeks, which has come to light are getting refined and better in actual ISIS chemical weapons laboratories. And they have successfully used and tested these weapons against the Kurds, against Syrian troops, and against Christian and Yazidi villages. They're practicing, folks. They're practicing. So, that's the word on the terror front. Now let's talk about the Russian reset. Oh, yes. Hillary's Russian reset. Wow. I'm really glad she has experience. So, we all know about the Russian reset. We all know it was a farce. We all know about Crimea and Ukraine. We know about Syria. We know about Russian expansionist activities, their attack on the dollar, their buddy-buddy, chummy-chummy militarily. Energy-wise, etc., with China, you know, you'll soon see some stuff going on with Guantanamo and Cuba, I guarantee you. So, in that omnibus budget bill, which nobody read and was passed, there's been some problems. There was a law passed. The rocket engines for our Stage 1 Saturn rockets, listen to this now, are built by Russia. Did you know that? Yes, they are. They're built by Russia. And, you're going to love this. Let me get the exact stuff for you here. You're going to love this. So, by the way, it was Tuesday evening, December 15th, 2015, 2,000 pages. And the Congress had to vote on it by December 17th. Not a single member of Congress, by the way, has claimed to have read this omnibus budget bill. Not a single member. But it turns out, that Congress's law last year, which outlawed using first stage engines in the Atlas V rocket, which, by the way, launches most of our military and national security satellites. Those RD-180 engines, by the way, they've powered more than 50 launches, are made in Russia. The law last year forbid us from using those engines anymore. The Atlas is a very reliable rocket. And it's used by the United Launch Alliance, which is jointly owned by Boeing and Lockheed Martin. You know, the aerospace defense mammoths in the United States. In the National Defense Authorization Act of 2015, Congress outlawed any military and security launches after 2019 using Russian engines. Well, there's a company by the name of Aerojet Rocketdyne said that it could design and certify a new engine by then. The United Launch Alliance between Lockheed and Martin then said, oh, well, we can do that too. And they teamed up with Jeff Bezos, he's the owner of Amazon, and his totally untried, untested space exploration company, which is, you know, rather amazing, actually. It's called Blue Origin, by the way. To make a long story short, in the omnibus spending bill, Obama had asked for $150 billion to develop an American-made rocket engine so that the Russians, you remember, we have sanctions against the Russians, folks, so that the so we would not be buying engines from the Russians. Magically, that number was raised from $150 billion to $227 billion in this bill that nobody read. And the United Launch Alliance was given permission to keep using Russian engines until a new engine, approved by the Defense Department, was developed. So we have, and by the way, this is at a time when we have sanctions against this country. So what does that tell all our European allies that we have demanded impose sanctions against Russia? Not the right message. Number two, what does this say about our red lines in the sand? Not much. And number three, what does this say about crony capitalism on the Hill? I mean, we all know damn well and good that lobbyists for the United Launch Alliance, Lockheed Martin and Boeing, got together and promised large contribution funds to a number of members of Congress, right? I mean, we know that. We don't even have to do the research on it. So not only do they keep using their engines and making money, the government is now financing them for $87 billion more than even Obama asked for to develop a new engine that then they can turn around and sell to us for more money. That, folks, is crony capitalism. That, folks, is why the outsiders in this election are doing so well. Because people may not have these numbers, they may not know the names of these companies, but they know this crap's going on all the time. I will give this to Trump. When he says he can cut out $300 billion in waste, fraud, and abuse, he's correct. In fact, he's only wrong on one count. It's more like a trillion. We're wasting $1 trillion a year on waste, fraud, and crony capitalism. It can all go away. By the way, Rhino John McCain, nothing to do with his war record, by the way, the guy's a hero. Rhino John McCain, I'm talking about his political and policy stances, was so pissed off over this bill because he was alerted to this clause that he voted against it, one of the few that did. On December 16th, the day before the bill was voted on, the day after it got on everybody's desk, McCain addressed the Senate and said, "How can our government tell European governments that they need to hold the line on maintaining sanctions on Russia, which is far harder for them to do than us, when we are gutting our own policy in this way? How can we tell our French allies in particular that they should not sell Vladimir Putin amphibious assault ships as we have, and then turn around and try to buy rocket engines from Putin's cronies?" I think that sums it up pretty well, John. I do indeed. Now, we have, for the next item, Hillary.